Hi, and welcome to this month's episode of Bossy Books. My name is Heather, and I am joined by my fellow bossy girl, Minju. And today, as always, we will be obnoxiously discussing a book, pretending that we're super smart and know what we're talking about. But we know you love it, and that's why you're here, giving us 48 precious minutes of your life to listen to us ramble and giggle our way through this podcast.
Nice.
So Minju, first question.
Yes.
How many times have you thought about me today?
Today? Maybe six?
Only? It's already 5 p.m. in Sydney.
Well, and it's mostly only podcast related. Yeah. I think about you more at work because I'm bored.
Because you need something sweet to think about while you're sitting at your office depressed.
Yeah, but on the weekends, yeah, today's Saturday. On weekends, I usually don't think about you.
Oh.
Just being honest. Okay?
Okay. Well, you're basically all I've been thinking about today since I woke up first thing in the morning. It's like, oh, I can't wait to talk to Minju. Can't wait to hear her beautiful
voice. Don't lie, Heather. Don't lie, okay? Or is it just because Matt's not around?
It's because he's not around. I'm husbandless.
Oh, gosh. When does he come back?
On Tuesday. So it's not that far away.
You'll be fine.
But until then, you have to be my stand-in husband.
Okay. And here I am.
Even though you're overseas as well, so that just sort of shows you how many friends I have here.
Aww. It's getting sad.
Anyway, tell us about the book that we read.
Yep. Well, this episode, we're discussing a memoir titled Irritable Hearts, a PTSD Love Story. So it is human rights journalist Mac McClelland. Is that how I say her name? Mac McClelland?
I think so.
Yeah,
it's her. With it.
Yes, McClelland. Let's just say Mac. Personal experience with PTSD and her healing process in amongst her work life and her love life. So 30-year-old Mac travels to Haiti. This is getting
Haiti.
Bad.
I think it's Haiti.
To report on the devastating earthquake, where she is confronted with a horrifying set of circumstances that sends her into trauma, disassociation, and PTSD. So her life is never the same again, and this starts her roller coaster journey of acceptance, love, criticism, therapy, violent sex, and healing. And like the title alludes, which I'm sure Heather can't wait to talk about, it's also a love story. So Haiti isn't just the location of her PTSD trauma, but also where she meets her French prince. And their love story is inseparably tangled in her struggle with her PTSD. So yes, it's a memoir this time, a nonfiction. I think it's our first nonfiction. Is that right?
It is, yeah. Were you disappointed that there actually was a love story in this book?
Well, I did really like the whole book, but the love story bit and how you must be gushing over it made me roll my eyes, but I didn't necessarily hate it, no.
The love story made you roll your eyes? Or
no,
the thought of me gushing over it.
Yeah, the thought of you gushing over it. Yeah, especially how we talked about the reluctant fundamentalist and your obsession with love stories.
Okay, I mean, fair enough, but honestly, this love story didn't really have me gushing.
Wow.
Just because the other part of this story, as in her PTSD, is so, it's all consuming.
Yeah.
And the love story is nice, but it's really just, here it's really just a side story. While I will still argue that in The Reluctant Fundamentalist, it is the main story.
I cannot believe it. Yeah, we'll never end that. PTSD. Did you know a lot about it before you read it? Like,
not really.
Read the book?
No.
What was kind of your understanding of
it? Well, basically, I had a pretty similar understanding to what Mac says. We'll just refer to her by her first name now because we're friends.
Yeah, because her last name's too hard.
She, before she actually gets this, she says that she only ever associated PTSD with like war veterans, like men, soldiers who've come back from Vietnam and from Iraq, Afghanistan, and that was basically the extent of her understanding of it. Same with me. Like when I think PTSD, I think of traumatized soldiers who have witnessed atrocities and have had to kill people and see people be killed and stuff in war. And that it's a disease that is that of that kind of extreme.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too. I had only really thought of it with veterans. I think, But I guess this book really like opened my eyes up to like what really PTSD was and what kind of people can get affected, what it can look like. And then it also talks a lot about like secondary PTSD, mm-hmm. right? Like if you're in a relationship or family with someone with PTSD, how you get it, kind of like secondhand smoking, you know, yeah. like how you still get the reverberations of the disorder, I guess, mental illness.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and so...
Yeah, it is very... It's quite educational. Like, it...
Yeah, it really
I learned
was.
A lot.
And she'd researched so much about
she
it.
She did. I mean, she's yeah. a journalist, so she's used to doing that kind of thing. And yeah. But she was also yeah. going through the disease and trying to understand it, the illness.
That's
and
right.
so she yeah. explains it very well. She puts like a definition in quite early in the book, which I think is really helpful and just explains it in a really yeah. clear way. She says, post-traumatic stress disorder is simply a nervous system's inability to return to its normal baseline after the trauma is over. A body perpetuating or suppressing memories of the incident long after the fact and firing life or death stress when those reactions or survival mechanisms are no longer necessary. So
yeah.
reading that, I was like, oh, like post-traumatic stress disorder is really just what I understand to be trauma. So I understand yeah. trauma to be like someone has a very traumatic, very troubling experience or event, and then that has repercussions in their life. Like even after the event is over, it causes them, you know, mental, physical, emotional harm and distress even afterwards. And so I always yeah, just yeah. thought that was that's trauma. But
yeah.
I guess that the stress that happens after the actual traumatic event, that is actually PTSD. That's what it is.
Sure, yeah. sure, yeah, yeah. Yeah, but I didn't realize that it could, you know, like, when I think of trauma, I feel like I think of people suffering from trauma as people who always, like, think about their trauma, can't kind of get over it. Like, it's more of an emotional thing or something, like something in their history that changed them, the way they look at life or something like that. But I didn't know that it went so far as to, like, bodily, emotional, like, adrenaline kind of... you know, bodily reaction, because like she talks a lot about how her heartbeat would just rise up and she'd feel like someone's gonna kill her.
Yeah.
You know, that was kind of like how her body was reacting, like highly anxious.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
That's
and
true.
So, yeah, and that explanation, like the definition of PTSD, like your nervous system and all your other systems kind of not returning back to how they're meant to when you're in like a safe place,
yeah.
that kind of wiring, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if these are the right terms, but I didn't know it was so intense.
Yeah, it's intense
yeah.
and it's very physical.
It's an intense
as
book.
Well.
Yeah, yeah, very physical.
It is.
Yeah.
It is a really intense book. Like, did you find it hard to read at times?
Yeah, sometimes I felt like, can there be like secondary, you know, like pain from reading this book? Do you know what I mean? Because it is really intense. Yeah, I did feel really shaken, and it made me think a lot about some of the ways I react to stress.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Or react to horrible things happening to people's lives.
Yeah.
Yeah. And whether I had a healthy way of doing that, whether I'd taken on burdens that I don't need to, like, do you know what I mean? Like,
yes.
it was kind of
yeah.
like mental and emotional processes you're meant to do to have a healthy emotional makeup kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it made me think more about that and whether
yeah.
I had the right skill sets kind of thing.
Mm. Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It definitely is a book that makes you reflect on your own mental health.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, that's
because
right. You start looking at yourself, you're like, hold on.
Yeah, yeah. Am I coping with things right? Like,
yeah,
you know,
coping, yeah.
Like, how do I deal with certain situations? Is it in a similar
sure.
way to what she does? Is it not? Because she makes it very clear that even though this wasn't really the first trauma she'd experienced in her life, she'd always taken pride in her mental health. She's a very
yeah.
strong person. She's
yeah.
a journalist to reports from very, like, dangerous and stressful situations.
Sure, yeah.
I've seen her, like, described in interviews, like, as a badass, you know? She's just this, like, really tough girl. And then
yeah.
I think she find it, like, not only difficult to cope with the illness in itself, but having to admit, like, oh, my, I'm sick and I'm, like, to have to admit that weakness.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it does I really felt her about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It does kind of give you a, like, oh, wow, this could happen to anyone.
Yeah.
Kind of.
That's right.
Feeling,
yeah.
Feeling. Yeah.
And you don't know what it is that would tick it over. Do you know what I mean? Because exactly. Like she said, she had like similar or like, it's not like she's never been to a third world, developing country, yeah. or like, you know, or seen horrible things or yeah. read or heard and yeah. interviewed. Like she had, and she'd experienced horrible things too, but, yeah. and she didn't know what was going on either when it happened.
Yeah, she had no idea until she went to see a therapist and described all her symptoms. Mm. And then they were like, oh, this sounds a lot like PTSD. And she's like, no way do I have PTSD. Only veterans have PTSD. And yeah. it took her a while.
Yeah, her understanding of PTSD was like similar to ours.
It took her a while to even accept that diagnosis. But then I think once she embraces that diagnosis and then realizes what she needs to do or like tries to figure out what she needs to do to get better, she is very, I guess, diligent in her healing journey. And that's, I guess that's what yeah. most of the book is about, like her journey towards yeah. healing and her very unconventional methods of healing. Give people a bit more background. Like, do you want to go through yeah. the actual event that I guess really triggered the trauma?
Sure. Yeah. So she's, I think it's like her second day in Haiti. Mm. And her story is about women survivors like of rape in Haiti. And there's a lot of rape going on in Haiti at the time. I mean, yeah. I think it was definitely a peak after the earthquake and everything like that. And so she was yeah. reporting with like an NGO about rape survivors. And she had a contact, this man who had a van and he was driving rape survivors to like, you know, government places or hospitals or to the NGO and things like that. And she goes along with him. And she, in the book, she kind of brushes over it very fast. She says she doesn't want to like inflict the pain to the readers as well. I guess she doesn't want to discuss it. And also, I mean, with more research, we find out that this victim survivor doesn't want to be talked about as well,
yeah.
ethically. But also, yeah. So basically what happens is they're in the van together. And I, from what you can tell in the book, the woman kind of has an episode herself mm-hmm. of terror and like screaming and just raw, like, unabated fear, yeah. trauma, yeah. pain.
Yeah.
And Max in this van with her, and she just watches this happen to this woman, you know, out of the blue kind of thing. And that's what really clicks her out. And she says she disassociates with it,
yeah.
where she describes it as like an out of body experience where she kind of comes out of her body and she's looking from above and she's like, what's this? What's happening? Mm. You know, why is this woman screaming? And, you know, it's like, she just snaps out. I guess her mental and emotional state decides, oh, I can't do this anymore. I can't take this in.
Yeah.
And just taps out, basically.
Yeah.
And since then, yeah. she continues in a state of dissociation. Or sometimes she comes back and she just wails and cries and, you know, drinks a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. And that disassociation is something that is recurring.
Yeah.
And gets worse and then it gets better sure. and then it gets worse like throughout her entire process. And
yeah, because that was her second day and her yeah. whole stay was 2 weeks.
Uh-huh.
And the whole time she's still working, you know, she's yeah. still going out and going to the tent, seeing, meeting more rape survivors. And she gets into a very like kind of threatening situation herself. Mm. And yeah, so on top of that trauma, she gets more and more trauma. So I remember when I was reading it, I was like, oh my gosh, get out. I was like, yeah. get out of there. Yeah. Because I felt like on top of the wound, like, you know, she just keeps on hurting herself. Yeah.
I felt that too. I think at the very yeah. beginning when she's starting to tell her story and, you know, you've just met her, you don't know her that well. Like, I couldn't help yeah. but, like, judge some of her decisions. Like,
yeah, yeah.
The way she describes her disassociation is so intense. You know, she literally cannot feel parts of her body.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I have no idea what that feels like. I've never experienced yeah. it, but it sounds terrifying. And so
yeah, yeah.
And it's something that she's never had before. So you think that if you're going through such a horrible time, like emotionally and physically, you would kind of a responsible adult would kind of be this is dangerous for me. I should leave. I should go home. Yeah,
I guess that's part of, like, why she found it so hard to admit she had PTSD, like, to herself, right? Because I think she always saw herself as strong and, like, you know, able to do these things and deal with these things. And
Yeah,
and I guess it just, she couldn't reconcile that with, like, her identity. And at the time as well, she was, like, talking on the phone for hours and crying with, like, friends. Yeah, and I was surprised none of her friends were telling her to get out.
Exactly. Or maybe they did and she just didn't want to hear it. Sure. And she's forgotten
it. Yeah.
But you know what? More than their friends, I was really shocked that her employer didn't tell her to get out. It's just irresponsible. Like, your journalist is having a breakdown overseas and they don't seem to really take care of her. But she does kind of mention that her, like, work and her colleagues weren't very empathetic to her condition. And so maybe it is just like, you know, journalism is a very stressful job. There are lots of times when people do have meltdowns on field and then they just pick themselves back up. Like, maybe that they just thought it was one of those things.
Like, she's getting tired. Also, the thing was that she continues to work throughout the book, like throughout the whole healing process. And she goes back to Haiti again thinking she's better after like a few months.
I thought that was really nuts as well. I was like,
why would you do that? She was going to lots of places and hearing lots of horrible stories and interviewing people and stuff. But, you know, right near the end of the book or three quarters of the way through, like, she kind of talks about that, how her therapist thought, like, you know, it was so core to identity and it was still something she was good at. So she should, instead of not working, be more picky about where she goes and the story she picks. But that didn't come on till later. But,
in what she's writing a story about her PTSD. So she obviously focuses most of her writing on that. And so you're seeing the intensity of her, her emotional and psychological state, but she doesn't really talk about her work as much. But it seems to, the impression that I got was that even though she was having these very severe episodes, she seemed to be functioning still okay, like professionally, at the very least. She was submitting stories. I know. I found that incredible. I couldn't.
And still thinking about new ideas and calling people for interviews and researching. I was like, oh, she's a machine.
Yeah, she's a machine. Like, if you're going through such a crazy, like, PTSD time, how can you sit down in front of your computer and, like, pump out, you know, thousands of words. Well-written words. Like,
Yeah, exactly. But I guess that's what she... Yeah, it stabilized her, I guess.
Yeah, it was, like, one of her things that kept her really, like, grounded and secure. Like, her work was very important to her.
Yeah. Yeah. It was very eye-opening. And it was really well-written. I read it really fast because I was so into it.
Or because you read it all last night?
No, I didn't. I was at like 80% last night.
Okay.
So I nearly finished. Okay. But yeah, it wasn't a chore to like reopen the book.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you're like, oh, I should read. But like with this book, I was like, oh, I want to know. And you just get lost in it. Yeah.
Of course she writes well because she's a professional journalist. But I think she does a good job in not making it too heavy and feeling like the reader is kind of getting assaulted or like punched in the face over and over again. There were points in the book where like she just it would just be episode after episode and she'd be describing every single one, and it was kind of hard to read because I know that she was doing a really great job trying to describe in words exactly what she was going through, but I just didn't really understand, just because it's not ever something that I've experienced or even seen. So those things I kind of have to just skim through and be like, just get like the general gist of what was going on. But I wasn't like, oh, wow, that's really what it feels like to have a dissociative experience. Like,
Or when those episodes where she wants to like stab herself, I was like, whoa, that's so intense.
There are some dark things that she thinks and stuff, but she just writes it so casually.
Yeah, she's so honest. Like, she's blatantly very honest. Yeah.
She's just blunt. And she just says, like, she says a lot of stuff that if your friend told you, like, oh, I had a dream where I, like, gouged someone's eyes out. And then
She has some crazy nightmares.
Yeah, and then I, like, stepped in their open wound.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
She kind of just says it like that. And if I had a friend who did that, I would be like, okay, I have to go home now.
Yeah, and usually after...
I call the police.
Usually after you share something like that, you might add some, like, I would be tempted to add some, like, ha ha ha, you know, or like something, or like explain it away or soften it up or a little bit, but she's just like, that, full stop, and then moves on. I'm like, huh? Yeah, so sometimes I was worried about reading it just before I slept, which I did, like, a few times. I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, but like,
yeah
I was okay.
I do appreciate how honest she is, because she kind of says a lot of things that no one ever says out loud.
Yeah, that's right.
Like, even if someone is very honest with you about, like, their mental illness or something really horrible they're going through, they kind of spare you the really gory details.
Yeah,
but she does not spare any of the details.
I think it shows also her self-awareness. Do you know what I mean? Like, she is quite a self-aware, and she seems like a external processor, maybe. Like, this is the way she lets it out and processes, and do you know what I mean? The way she talks. There's this one little bit that I found kind of displays her honesty and her blatantness, but it was also kind of, I don't know if charming is the right word, but like, not even sure if funny is the right word, but basically... it's a time where her and Nico, the French guy who she falls in love with, he's in San Francisco with her, and she's like kind of talking about how like they fight, and you know, because of her PTSD, she gets very like sensitive and intense, and the kind of things they fight about. And but this kind of episode really showed like what was going through her mind. So there's this one time where they go to a sushi train. I don't know if you remember this, Heather, but they go to a sushi train and they're sitting at the train and there's a sushi guy in front of them and things like that. And Nico is being really loving, like, you know, pecking her on the cheek and whispering things into her ear and, you know, being kind of PDA and like really in love. They are really in love with each other. Yeah. And then she gets like really angry and like tells him to stop. And like, in a really loud, aggressive way. And this really takes Nico back. And obviously he's hurt and offended by it, like to be publicly told off like that about being affectionate, you know? And then later on, maybe I think it's a day later or later that night, she realizes what was going through her mind and she shares it with Nico. And I just want to share this bit. It's really funny. So she's like explaining to him what was going on. She goes, "I didn't want the sushi guy to know that I'm in love," I said suddenly out of nowhere for both of us. And then Nico goes, "What? Why?" And she goes, "Because then he would know that I needed you." Nico made a face and he says, "And?" And then she goes, "He would think I couldn't take care of myself," I said. And as the realization came together, I started crying. And then he would think I would be easy to kill. Like, that was, do you know what I mean? I was like, what? And even she writes after that, "Wee!" Like, she was like, she knows this is crazy. Like, jump from, you know, I can't take care of myself because I'm in love. And the next one is, he'll know I'm easier to kill. And I was like, oh my gosh. That's... Yeah, I found that, I like that little, I didn't like it in the way that I like her pain. But do you know what I mean? Yeah. I thought it was very telling.
Yes, she got, it's, I think it's really kind of brave of her to do it because she knows she's going to get judged. Like, you know, there were points in the book where I was reading it and I was like, this girl is nuts.
Yeah.
Yeah, like when she says things like that, like there was a bit where they're like thinking about getting engaged and then Nico says, "I was dreaming we were shopping for engagement rings." And she replies, "Oh yeah?" I said, "Oh yeah, I was dreaming I stepped in a decomposing face."
Yeah. That's
true. And she, like, will freely admit that to the world this seems completely crazy and nuts. And, like, she tells us that she talks to her friends and her friends are like, "You are nuts." Like, she's so just, blah. Like, she lets her crazy out for the world to see.
Yeah, yeah.
And
that's right.
No one, people don't really do that. Like, people will be they'll admit, like, "Oh, you know, back in the day I struggled with this." And that in itself is considered to be really groundbreaking. But she just puts it all out there.
And I guess one of the big things that happened that really made her controversial was one of the methods she used decided to use to kind of heal herself or restore herself, which was to, I guess, have violent sex to get over her fear of violent sex, basically, or like rape.
Well, yeah, so she, I think this is like kind of in the period right after Heidi and she, Heidi, yeah. And then she,
sorry,
she, every time she starts to think about sex, she breaks down.
She wants to vomit and like,
And she hates that because that's, sex has always been something that she was very free and comfortable with. And she hated being being that person. And she decides, like, I don't know how she even comes to this decision because I don't think her therapist actually recommends it. It's more like.
No, but she kind of comes up with it. She's like, I really want to have violent sex.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think, like, she just wanted it. She was, like, imagining it.
She did. She was having those, like, fantasies. She really wanted it.
Yeah.
But then to actually go ahead with it as something that might help her, that was, like, that was her decision and her, but it's just that her therapist was very supportive of that. And I think she, like, in her own reading, she found that, you know, certain experts had said that, you know, reenactments of, like, a traumatic event could be a way of, like, restoring agency and power, and that would help the healing process. Yeah. So she actually goes ahead with it.
Yeah. But in a, like, in a safe way.
Do you really think so?
Well...
Like, when you read that scene, did you feel like that was a completely safe situation?
I mean, what happened wasn't safe per se. Like, she could, she probably had bruises and stuff afterwards. But the guy who she did it with, like, she knew, like, he had been a good friend or ex-boyfriend, but, you know, good friend, and that he was doing it for her. Do you know what I mean? It wasn't like she went and found some violent guy in a bar and, like, you know what I mean? It was, she didn't go in blind. And to a degree, she was in a safe place, though the actions weren't safe. Do you know what I mean? Because, like, the therapist asked her, is there someone that could do this for you? Like, don't go and find trouble, but...
But still, like, it was just so incredibly violent. Yeah. Like, this is not just... It wasn't just, you know, like, rough and tumble sex. Yeah. It was, like, violent, kind of dangerous. Yeah. Like, there's a point where he has to, like, put a pillow over her face because he's, like, punching her in the face, like, over and over again. Yeah. And then she fights him, and then he overpowers her. Yeah. So
over and over until she's, like, so tired and
relaxes. She just gets worn out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But that's what she wanted, like, to be fought and to win and... Or not win, but to, like, kind of get the fight out or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it is what she wanted, but the reading that scene, I was just really like, oh, like, I don't know how I feel about... this.
Yeah, I, like, think I read the I'm whole scene, like, holding my breath, like, oh. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Because, okay, look, I am no expert on, like, S&M or, like, violent sex or, like, whatever.
Oh, okay.
But this was, like, it was literally more like she gave someone permission to rape her.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. To reenact it. So I think a lot of people, like, you know, some people that wrote about this book or the article, she first released an article about it.
Yeah.
Right? And then she's written the book and people were like, yeah, she basically reenacted a rape to get over the possibility of rape.
Yeah.
Because she was never raped, but there was a lot of, like, she'd been in lots of threatening, on the precipice of rape situations. Yeah. Yeah.
And the trauma was... And the trauma was very strongly associated with sexual violence.
Yeah. Ooh, nice.
Oh, jinx. Strange thing to jinx, but okay.
oh, gosh.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I didn't feel that situation was safe. I didn't know that, I didn't feel like she was in control of that situation. Mm. Like, I was like, if you're telling someone to ignore everything that you fight off, how, if she really wanted to stop, like, how should she could she communicate that?
You mean they didn't choose a safe word?
I don't think so. Like, not in the way she tells it. And whole point of it, like, it's to... A safe word would defeat the purpose. Because she genuinely didn't want it. Like, she she hated it when he was trying to, like, force himself on her. Yeah. The whole point was that she was, like, genuinely trying to fight him off, and that's he would, like, overpower her. And then in the end, she just breaks down and weeps, and, like, he holds her and, like, tells her that she's strong. Yeah. And, I mean, in the end, it did help her. It didn't cure her, but it helped her get over those very...
It took a big step in helping her, like, reclaim a normal sex life and sex drive and stuff. I mean, she's a very controversial, like, person.
Yeah, she is. Like, if you... I didn't even know this about her before reading this book, but if you just Google her name, like, the first thing that comes up is, like, that article that she wrote about that particular incident and all the criticism and that kind of went on her. But you know what? Like, the criticism wasn't so much on the violent sex thing. I think people tried to be very, like, empathetic and open-minded about that. The criticism was more about how she wrote about Haiti and the victim.
And the kind of controversy about, like, oh, you know, there are people way more suffering in Haiti. I can't believe you're making this about you.
Exactly.
Kind of thing, right? You were only there for 2 weeks. What do you even know? Yeah. Like, how, like, narcissistic kind of hate.
Exactly. It's like, white lady witnesses a rape victim, and then she writes about her trauma and doesn't just glosses over the trauma of the many, many, many women who are going through.
And even
much...
that woman. Yeah.
Exactly.
What did you think about that?
I understand where they're coming from, but reading this book, you know, I chose to read this book. I committed to reading this book. I really wanted to be on her side as I read this book. And she is also a victim of trauma. Yeah. And just because what she actually experienced is not, in our minds, deserving of a traumatic response as others.
Yeah.
What she experiences is real. Sure. And the point of this book is to help us understand that and empathize with that. So I didn't fight her on that. I went along with it.
Yeah, me too. I kind of think that argument, like, doesn't hold. Do you know what I mean? I don't think it's a valid argument, you know? Like, comparing traumas and comparing people's pain, you know, like... then no one has any right to complain about anything. Do you know what I mean? It's like, and I think she talks about that a lot. Like, and that's why she has trouble dealing with PTSD as well. Because she's like, I don't have a right to be suffering like this. Do you know what I mean? I didn't go through much, you know, and that really is like blocks her from her treatment and her healing. And it also invalidates other people's pain, you know, like, if if your child dies, say, like, that's horrible, but no one's saying to you, like, suck it up, that person, like, three kids died, you know, three of their children died, no one's saying that, that's a horrible thing to say, and so I think it's really rude, and I feel like it's not an argument, though, like, I understand that people who have Haiti really close to their hearts and they work in the NGOs there and they're on the field, and I can see why they would get defensive or, like, you know, that might be their first reaction. But I think, you know, we really need to realize that she is going through pain and it's legitimate and, you know, she deserves our empathy and compassion. I, like, read this one blog from this woman who was, after all the criticism had come for Mac, she was kind of writing, you know, in support of her. And she was like, she was basically saying, like, for people who think that Mac is being narcissistic, she would say that maybe those people don't think PTSD is even real. Do you know what I mean? Why are you putting this on? Like, as if she wants attention. But she's not putting it on. PTSD is a real thing. And it's a real, like, mental illness. And it's a real trauma. So, like...
And she does talk about those attitudes towards mental illness and how it's not as, people don't see it as a valid of an illness as, say, cancer.
Yeah.
But in reality, it is. It is just as debilitating and it kills people.
Yeah. And I think even myself, I had those kind of biases, like a little bit. And reading this book really kind of called them out and, like, showed how wrong that was. And like you said, reading this book made me think about my own mental health and how important it was to really care about that. Not just care about, like, you know, or my stomach issues, or like, you know, my migraines, or, you know, all like these kind of illnesses you always like, you know, symptoms you get worried about and go to the doctor for, but to also like always be like assessing, like, am I mentally healthy, you know, because it means everything.
Yeah, it does. Because another big theme in her healing and like what she learns is how connected like the mental is with the physical.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. The way her therapist
Because her,
does it.
Her symptoms are very physical.
Mm.
Like more than anything that I've ever heard about or seen. Like it's not just her like crying, which seems like a very normal response, but it's like her body, like
Not inhabiting her own body.
Exactly. Like that just sounds, like so scary. Like she can't feel other people. She can't feel herself. She feels like heaviness and tightness and all those things. Like it is very physical. And so she eventually does move on to a very, a treatment that focuses on her body, which is it's called somatic treatment.
And a lot of it's done on like a massage table.
And the therapist
is like, pushes onto her chest and her arms and like gets her to feel. And I really like the therapist. I wish I could like just have an hour with her or something. I don't know what we would say, but do you know what I mean? Like she just seems so like nice.
Shall we talk about the sexy French man?
Oh gosh. They're quite incredible just on their own, their love story.
I think even if she didn't have PTSD, like their love story would be worth a book. Actually, speaking of that, you know what? The first time I encountered this story was I read an article like a year or two ago about her, a journalist, having this love affair with a Frenchman and how that they communicated over Google Translate.
Yeah.
And so it was just an article, like, kind of talking about their initial relationship where they were long distance and she couldn't speak French, he couldn't speak English, and so everything that they said was run through Google Translate.
Yeah.
And that article didn't even mention her PTSD.
Yeah.
So, and I loved that article because I thought it was so, like, such a modern love story.
Yeah.
You know, like, using Google Translate to communicate with someone.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so their love story is something in itself.
Yeah, definitely. I Googled a photo of him. So I was so curious what he looked like. Yeah.
I full stalked him.
I could only find one photo.
Obviously, your stalking skills are not at my level. I found out that he is now a personal trainer.
Oh, yeah, because I was wondering what he does now.
Yeah, so he lives in the States. Mm. They're still married. He is now a personal trainer. And I confirmed that it was him because, like, in his personal training bio, he talks about how he used to be in the French gendarmes or, like, whatever they're called.
Yeah. I'm not sure. Yeah.
But it's this super, very, like, old school romantic story where it's love at first sight. Like, on her first night at the hotel, like, they're in a pool and he sees her. And they, you know, they get into a conversation in their, like, broken languages. And then he shows up at her door that night and is just like, I want to ask if I can please kiss you. Or like something,
yeah, I know.
Something
it's
like
so
that.
Cute.
Yeah. Aww. And they manage to stay in love and have this crazy
send
romance.
So many emails. Yeah. Skypes and then like lots of overseas rendezvous and then eventually, like, him moving to San Francisco.
Yeah. It's amazing because
against all odds.
Exactly. It's not like it's already not hard enough to have a long-distance relationship with someone whose language you don't speak, but one of them is suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder.
Yeah. And he's so amazing, like...
He's like an angel.
Yeah. I mean, we see his faults and, like, where he gets angry and isn't able to show all patience and all lovingness or whatever. Like, every normal human being. But he always comes back and he's committed and, like, you know, he loves her.
He's so supportive. And she says throughout the book that he is basically the one thing that keeps her together. Like,
it's true. Yeah.
She wants him and she wants to be with him. And that really drives her desire to get better.
That's right. Yeah. I think I saw it written in kind of a way, like she wants to heal her heart so she can give it to him. And you really do see that.
Yeah.
And it's really beautiful.
They are kind of nice parts of the book, because the rest of it is so...
That's true.
Intense and kind of emotionally draining. But then there are just these like interludes that are just so full of like really pure love and just selflessness and care for each other, mainly from Nico to her. But even in the midst of her illness, like the love that she feels towards him is really something That's as right. well. But he's incredible. Like, I don't know if I could do that.
No, I'd run. I mean, if you meet a girl randomly at a hotel or whatever, you start sending emails, but then you found out she was like a bunch of crazy. Then you'd be like, oh, she's crazy. Like, no one wants to be the crazy girl. Guess love is real.
It is really one of those like love stories for the ages, like kind of thing you don't really read about anymore in real life.
Exactly. And honestly, like I'm a we all know, I'm a bit of a cynic like to this stuff, like like love at first sight, I need you, you know, I can't imagine my life without you, and like they've only spent 10 minutes with each other and stuff. Anyways, and like this one even, I was quite skeptical at the beginning. I was like, oh, this is a PTSD, and like she needs, like it's because she's like very needy. Like, this is not the time to have a relationship, you know? Mm. And like, I was like, oh, I don't know where this is going. Is this going to end up bad? You know, all this stuff. But then like by the end of it, I was like totally won over. I was like, I guess it's real, maybe.
Love conquers all.
Yeah, it can.
Yeah.
You know? And so.
He's a dream guy. He's literally a dream guy.
Yeah,
he doesn't seem real.
Yeah.
That's why I Googled him so hard. I was like, surely this guy is made up.
What, did you expect the photo to be like a blow-up doll or something? This is Nico.
Photoshopped.
You were right. He's not real. Yeah, because I think sometimes when I was reading it, you might think it was fiction even.
Yeah.
Seems like a fiction kind of love story.
Some of the things that happen in this book are so sensational that there were points where I doubted its authenticity.
Oh, even the horrible stuff that happens to Nico as well.
Oh, yeah. It gets
his
really...
background as well. Let's not spoil it. Let's leave something for our readers.
Yeah. Well, we can just say that he has a tragic background and then something tragic happens to him as well.
It's not all easy going for him either.
It's interesting that... Because this is a true story, you seem to be a lot more... You seem to embrace the love story a lot more.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That is probably... Yeah, if it was fiction, I'd be like, corny.
Yeah, it would be corny. No, it would be corny if it was fiction. Yeah,
I would not appreciate it at all. I love nonfiction, Heather. See how positive and gushing I've been this whole podcast?
So you really... Did you love this book?
Yeah, I love this book.
Would you recommend it to people?
Yeah, I would. Lots of people. Everybody.
Like, what... If you had to put your love in a nutshell, like, how? Like, what was it about it?
I think the thing I really enjoy about nonfiction is, number one, or, like, memoirs. Not all nonfiction, obviously. Not, like, an encyclopedia or anything. But memoirs is that it's a story, right? It's about someone's life. So it's usually an amazing and interesting story. But also at the same time, it's very educational. Do you know what I mean? It's like two birds, one stone. Yeah, and so...
It's
like,
all about efficiency.
It's all about efficiency here. But do you know what I mean? And it's rooted in real life. I think, I don't know if I really appreciate, like, being away with the fairies, like, and thinking a lot about hypotheticals. I don't know if that's what really gets me or excites me or relaxes me or something I enjoy, you know? But I love, I don't know.
I like this book too. I think for the same reasons that you did, because the story itself is true and it's extremely interesting. It's compelling.
Yeah.
And it is very, very educational, like in a very applicable way. It's not like you're just learning about some historical event or like war or economics or something that isn't really related to real life, but it's something that I think
I feel like it's made me a better person.
Exactly. It's made me a more empathetic person, and it's prepared me for in a small way for like my own trauma, because apparently according to her, pretty much 100% of people experience trauma before they're 45. And it kind of prepares me for that, because to be honest I've never really had a lasting like mental episode or I guess illness or disorder or whatever. I mean, of course I have my like minor meltdowns all the time, but nothing serious. But I am very I'm very aware that it could happen at any moment. And so preparing myself for that, and also, you know, to be a more empathetic person towards others.
Sure.
Cause,
yeah, and more understanding. Exactly.
There's something in there that her therapist said that I really liked, and it's, she says to be nice to your crazy. I really love that.
And when she starts being nice to it. Oh, that's how. Oh, okay. Oh, no. Spoiler.
What's. There's nothing really to spoil, though, is there?
I guess so, yeah. Well, basically, it ends, and, like, I mean, like, she's gone, come so far in the healing process. But that's when she kind of. Her, it kind of. The last sentence is her embracing and loving her crazy.
Yeah.
You know, like, when her instincts to, like, protect herself comes in and her, the anxiety increases and all that kind of thing, she's kind of like, oh, like, thank you for being here. I know you're just trying to protect me or something like that. Is that how it ends?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I think that's something I think I've been learning, too, about the importance of being kind to yourself. Showing empathy toward yourself.
Come on, Heather, though. Some of your crazy we shouldn't embrace.
Excuse me.
I'm kidding.
I am one of them. I think I take better care of my mental health than I do of my physical health. And I'm very kind to my crazy. Like, I will tell, I will say that I think I'm very mentally healthy, and then Matt will tell you that I'm the craziest person he knows. But then, I think it's because, you know, I allow myself to be crazy when I need to be, and I don't make myself feel bad about it. I'm like, this is just what I need to do. Like, I need to cry for an hour because I know I'm going to feel a million times better afterwards. Like, that's how I process things, and I think that's totally
But isn't it worrying that you need to cry for an hour?
No.
You think that's
crying for an hour is healthy. So it avoids me bottling things up so I don't cry for, like, days or, like, months.
So do you literally just, like schedule it or something?
No. Yeah, I put in my diary, like, my monthly cry. No, there's sometimes I feel, like, overwhelmed by a certain, like, emotion, and I know that the only thing that's going to make me feel better is to cry. And so there have actually been times where I've kind of force myself to cry, like, almost like a purge. And then there are times where it just comes naturally, and then I just let it, like, I open the floodgates and I let it run for as long as it needs to.
So say you felt this, like, at an inappropriate time, say, like,
like on the bus
at or something, right? And so, like, when you're reading maybe and you feel really emotional about it, and you could probably cry and, like, stay on this topic and cry and let it lead to other topics and then cry. Do you know what I mean? That's kind of what you're doing, right? But you can't right now because after you get off this bus, you're meant to go to a birthday party or something like that. And so you kind of like, yay, and then you go and do your life, right? Hopefully. Anyways, and then do you ever, like, come back home and be like, hey, I need to address that emotion on the bus?
You know what? That's never actually happened. It's always happened in the safety and privacy of my own home.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Lucky you.
So, yes, everyone, be kind to your crazy.
Yes. Yes, we all should. No, that's
Good. She says that, you know, once you get over the fear of feeling sad, you realize that sadness in itself can be a very beautiful emotion. It's a valid and exquisite emotion, she says, and I think that's really true.
Anyway, this probably leads well onto what we're reading next month, hopefully.
Yeah.
I think this podcast is a little late. I think we're like 6 weeks or something.
Sorry to all our devoted fans.
Yeah, it's probably my fault. But yeah, do you want to introduce the fiction book we'll be reading?
Yeah, it is fiction, but it's slightly different.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Yeah, it's something very different. Oh, not that different, but it's just something that neither of us really read. It's just a collection of short stories. The author is Helen Oyeyemi. She's a British author, and the book is What Is Not Yours Is Not Yours. It's a brand new book, so new that Minju can't even buy it in store. And she's written a novel once, and this is a collection of her short stories. It has, like, universal acclaim. It looks like it will be just some, like, beautiful words to read. So I'm excited to read it.
Me too.
Yes. So I guess that's it for another month.
Yeah, so thanks for listening, everyone. read the PTSD book if you can, or read the short story one to hear us in our next podcast, which should be coming to you in a month. Thanks, Heather.
Thanks, guys. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Goodbye. See you next month.
Thanks. Bye. Bye.